Hello and welcome to Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Shelley Delaney. It's Wednesday, November 30th, 2022. On today's show, 49 Writers previews upcoming workshops and literary happenings around the state. Rainforest Yoga talks about their upcoming workshop with Dr. Marnie Hartman. The Juno Douglas City Museum and their featured solo artist, Mary McEwen, are here to talk about her show and artist talk this weekend. And the Juno Arts and Humanities Council will provide a roundup of all the other happenings and more this Friday and Saturday at Gallery Walk. Those conversations, Sounds Wild, Savory Moment, music and more coming up right here on Juno Afternoon. Weather for today, Audigan, it's sunny, and Kusiat, it's cold. KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Akkwan. The Hliné Dí have stewarded this area for thousands of years. The tidelands where our studios sit are now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots, but they were once a source of food, a place to maintain smokehouses, and a place to gather driftwood for fuel. In sharing this history, KTOO hopes to honor the ancestors and the descendants of the Akkwan. We recognize those families who have never relinquished their ownership and stewardship of their land and waterways, and continue to cherish and depend upon their immediate connection to the waterfront for today and for future generations. We'd also like to take a moment to say thank you to the individuals who helped us craft our daily land acknowledgement. Gunashchish to Vera Starbird, who planted the idea of making it super place specific and guided us on pronunciation. Lillian Petershore, who created so much of the beautiful structure. Ishmael Hope, who gave additional ideas, and Ernestine Hayes, Bob Sam, and Fran Houston, who gave important feedback. We are grateful to all those offering guidance as we grow as an organization. This is Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. This Friday is the highly anticipated annual gallery walk, and the City Museum is preparing another opening reception for their solo artist program. This month, the featured artist is Mary McEwen. Welcome, Mary.
Hi, Shelley. Thanks for having us.
Hi, of course. And also here is Beth Weigel, director of the City Museum. Hi, Beth.
Hi. Thanks for having us.
Well, thanks both of you for coming in. Mary, your exhibit opens this Friday. It's called Hit and Miss: Adventures in Textile Reuse. What does that title mean?
Yeah, so I took the title Hit and Miss. It's from the name of a traditional woven rag rug. Hit and Miss is a rug style that is kind of a grab bag of a bunch of different colors of fabrics of rags from reused clothing traditionally. And I liked the name of that partly because, you know, I have a couple of hit and miss rugs in the show, and I also kind of liked the humor in it, that like maybe this is a good idea or maybe it's a terrible idea.
Is that why it's called hit and miss?
Hit and miss.
It's a hit.
Spoiler alert. I know that tell me a little bit about the inspiration about like behind this exhibit, because a lot of it is focused on reusing textiles specifically, like not recycling them and not throwing them away.
Yeah, so, I mean, as you know, I'm an artist and I do other types of work, but weaving isn't something that I have done apart from like one class in college in the 90s. And I was interested in the idea of textile recycling, and I ran across that phrase somewhere in a conversation about solid waste in Juno. And I was like, what even is textile recycling? Like, can we compost? Like, what does the recycling process look like? And I kind of was looking at the different options there are, because, you know, we have thrift stores and we have the circular economy for reuse and donation and those kinds of things. But I know for myself and for a lot of people I've talked to, it's hard to find places to donate clothing because there is just so much of it. And so some things get shipped to other communities. If you're down south, a lot of things get shipped overseas. And so looking at kind of what the different options are, a lot of them are still, especially if you're shipping clothing somewhere, it's still fossil fuels intensive. And and so I was interested in like kind of looking back to more traditional ways, which is cut it up and make a rug. And so in order to do that, I started in my own closet, of course, because I had, you know, that category of clothing that was like too tired to wear, but like you can't donate it because no one else wants to wear it either.
I know that category.
Not good enough to donate. And got a couple of floor looms set up and learned about it. And it was fun to learn kind of about the history of it around the world and in the United States. And as far back as like the 20s, professional weavers in this one textbook that I have calls rag rug weaving and hit and miss in particular something that is, you know, pretty ugly. And I think she uses the word hideous and a waste of time. And so this I discovered after I had started, which I found just hilarious because it's like here I am being trolled by someone 100 years ago telling me this is a terrible idea. And so I kind of kept the attitude throughout, like, well, let's just see what happens with this. And can we, you know, apply kind of an old timey idea to a very current problem and see what happens?
Can you talk a little bit about fast fashion, which is a concept that has also inspired your project and your purpose for textile reusing and recycling?
Yeah, so a lot of the clothes that we have are made to break down pretty quickly. And so especially if we think about vintage clothing, I know some of the pieces that I have, like, you know, the old Woolrich halibut jacket that a lot of us have had for 20 plus years, like those are made to last. But we have other things that are made to just last a little while before they start falling apart. And the more we get those pieces in our closets, they wear out faster, so that forces you to buy clothing more quickly. And then a lot of it does end up as garbage in a landfill. And I think one of the things, you know, keeping this local to Juneau, I know we don't have a mall, we don't have a lot of the places that people think of when they think of fast fashion. But do you know who the world's biggest purveyor of fast fashion is?
Tell me.
It's Juneau's favorite store. It's Costco.
Oh, you're kidding.
Yeah. And so that was kind of an interesting fact, I think, because
I am shocked.
I think, you know, a lot of us kind of give them a pass, but then you think, well, you know, how did we get these jeans for $12 at Costco, and who's making them, and what's the impact of getting these clothes that we're gonna keep purchasing over and over again, and what can we do with them? So it was kind of an interesting learning experience, and this project was kind of a reflection on some of that. About consumption and where things come from.
You were quoted as saying recent estimates give the Juneau dump about 20 years before it's full. I know this is something that a lot of people think about when they're trying to decide what to do with stuff that's piled up and they need to get rid of it. So do you think that your work is making any kind of impact there?
I mean, it's tiny, let's be honest. But I mean, you know, in terms of pounds, it's not huge. I've, you know, saved a few bags of clothing, and I plan on continuing this, of course, after this show is done. But I think it's, you know, part of a larger, you know, this show at the museum kind of tells the story of how I did what I did and some of the tools that I used in hopes that other people will also think about, like, where's my stuff coming from and what am I going to do with it when it's done. I know when I've spoken to people about this show again and again, I hear, oh, I have so much stuff that I can't figure out what to do with, and I feel bad throwing it away. Mm-hmm. And that is, you know, what can we do before we get to the fact that we feel bad throwing things away? First, you know, start with less, buy less, consume less. But once we have it, then what can we do with it? I think as an artist, you know, most of us are buying new materials to start with and buying new fibers to sew with and knit with. And so with this, I really wanted to start with stuff that was already out there. So it's all locally sourced.
Well, tell me a little bit about the pieces that will be on display and how you made them.
So there's some larger rugs. I had two floor looms set up. One was a Swedish textile loom that was upright, so the warp threads were vertical, and that was about 5 feet wide. So the width of my largest piece is just under 5 feet, and that's like a landscape. So I kind of some of the pieces are kind of rugs in that hit and miss style, where it's just kind of a stripy random rug where you can, you know, I can look at it and say, oh, that's my kid's pants. I recognize those stripes. I wanted to keep pieces of textiles big enough that I could recognize them. And then there are some that are more more like a design in nature. So there's, you know, a landscape that, you know, Juno view down the channel with those Juno blues and grays. But it's made out of sheets and pants. And there's even some underwear and socks hiding in there. So maybe this is the first time the Juno City Museum has had underwear on display. I don't know. You'll have to look pretty closely to find them.
I've seen some denim in there, too.
That's awesome. Yeah. So the exhibit Hit and Miss opens Friday at 4 p.m. at the Juno Douglas City Museum. It will be on display until December 29th. And you're also giving an artist talk on Saturday, December 3rd, 11 a.m. What questions do you think people will have for you?
Oh, I don't know. What I'm looking forward to is showing off some of the tools that I used. And we actually moved in one of the floor looms into the museum. And so that is going to be on display as well to show how that works. And then also some of the vintage, like rag cutters and other types of, I was really focused on like very low tech technology for this. And I wanted to show some of the process things that people could use. So I hope to demonstrate some of that stuff.
Beth, turning to you now, are you all ready for Friday? Gallery Walk seems to just sneak up on me every year, but I'm sure you've been preparing for a while.
We have, and it's been fun watching the pieces go up on the wall today, and she set up that loom, like she said, and it's just made the whole feel of the gallery just a little bit different than usual because there's 3D as well as 2D on the wall, so that's really fun. And we've continued around the map case, the exhibit about celebrating the Salmon Creek Dam, which, of course, was in 2022 recognized as a National Historic Civil Engineering Landmark by the American Society of Civil Engineers. So slideshow as well as some real photographs from that period when it was being built that we've had framed and put up. So really nice addition to that area. And otherwise, we've got things in the gift store for people who are wanting to do a little holiday shopping, I guess. And we still have a few of Carrie Kirkpatrick's prints and cards from last month's solo artist in our gift store. So stop on by. And I'm guessing you'll bring some delicious treats, Mary, and
yes,
we'll have
yes,
some other treats.
Snacks.
Yep. So
wow.
Snacks are back.
We're back to snacks. Yep.
Love it.
We took down the sneeze guard around the entrance there, so we'll feel a little more open to everybody who's coming in. But of course, you can still wear your mask when you come to the City Museum and feel like you're protecting yourself and others.
Of course. And is there anything else happening at the City Museum you want to mention today?
I guess just that we will have holidays coming up and just check in with us. But otherwise, you know, we'll have some closures during the holidays. But do check in with us about when those are. Otherwise, Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 4, we're open. And admission is free right now, thanks to the generous support of Michelle Storr. So she provides sponsorship for free admission at the City Museum 3 months out of the winter months here. So we really appreciate her and the other folks who sponsor free admission.
Thank you so much, Beth. And thank you, Mary, as well. Good luck this Friday. It's a big Friday for an opening at the museum, but I know it's going to be a lot of fun. And thank you both for coming in today and for talking with me and answering my questions.
Yeah, great. Thanks a lot.
We'll see you Friday.
Sounds good. Coming up, we'll hear about the literary group 49 Writers, but first, here is the savory moment. This week's episode is called The Razor's Edge.
Step in to the savory moment. When it comes to cooking, good things are often found in close proximity to bad things. The trick is to walk the razor's edge in between. For those who like to eat the crispy bits of salmon skin at the edge of a well-cooked fillet, The razor's edge is on the grill. On one side of this fine line, you have undercooked skin, still slithery and slippery. On the other, a funeral pyre where all is burned and bitter. An unspeakably delicious compromise lives in the middle, if we can pull off the balancing act. Here are some tips. First, coat your salmon with cooking spray. This will keep it from adhering to the hot grates. A buffer of air, however microscopic, can mean the difference between ambrosial and annihilated. And this will also prevent those crackling bits of skin from shearing off when you pull the fillet from the grill. Next, use a medium-low heat. A grill that's too hot will vaporize the skin before the rest of the fillet has had a chance to cook. Also, don't flip the fish. Cook it skin side down the whole way through for prolonged heat contact. Finally, use a sauce that calls for some kind of fat. Alice Bay Barbecue Salmon by cookbook author Julie Rousseau is a Pacific Northwest classic recipe using a generous amount of butter and other kitchen staples. Serve your salmon with extra barbecue sauce on the side, mashed potatoes, and a green salad. Eat the crispy bits of salmon skin first before they get stolen off your plate by the enlightened. Find the full recipe for Alice Bay Barbecue Salmon at savorymoment.org. I'm Beth Short-Rhodes. Whatever is on your dinner table tonight, may you savor the moment.
Hansen Gress. Ka eat with the shoe ye, we kashuk a ye tin. Jin kat ka ke jin ta kanakaya ha an a kak gunish cheese.
And support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with 7 cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com. I'm Shelley Delaney, and joining me now is Katie Bosler for 49 Writers here in the studio. Hi, Katie.
Hi, Shelley. Good to be here.
Yeah, and on the Zoom, we have Joanna Castle Miller, guest instructor for an upcoming class for 49 Writers. Hi, Joanna.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thanks for being here today. Welcome to the show. Katie, let's start with you. You're the vice president of 49 Writers. What can you tell me about the group and the literary scene here in Alaska?
Well, 49 Writers is really key to the literary scene here in Alaska. I've been on the board now for at least 8 years, if not more. That's all I can count at this point. And 49 Writers started about 12 or 13 years ago. A couple of writers, Andromeda, Romano Lax was one of them. And they thought, you know, we really need to have kind of a networking organization for writers, but also a place where people can go to workshops, writing workshops, feel a sense of community, learn more about what other writers are doing in the state. And so they formed this out of Anchorage group. Now it's a statewide group, and there's a statewide board. And we have a really, I think, strong board right now. We have board members in Bethel, Fairbanks, Homer, Juneau. I'm now one of 3 board members from Juneau. The other 2 who have recently joined us, are Misty St. Clair, who is a poet, and Emily Wall, who a lot of your listeners are familiar. She, of course, is a well-known local poet as well as a professor of writing at the University of Alaska Southeast.
Can you give me an example of some of the events that 49 Writers puts on, like maybe the highlights over the last year or so, events or anything else that you guys like to do?
Well, what's been really, I don't want to call it a blessing of the pandemic, because the pandemic is a huge, tragic global event. But like a lot of entities, we did start using Zoom and online things a lot more. So we actually have been able to offer more workshops online, more readings. So we have an author's reading series, for example, that is online. An author like, say, someone like Hank Lentfer out of Gustavus, we'll do a reading on a weeknight. Heather Lendy of course, the writer laureate from Haines, well-known also to Juneau art enthusiasts and actually everyone. She has started a kind of an exchange with other writers that happens every other month or so online. And that, of course, is something that anyone can tune into.
You guys are such an active group. I receive mm-hmm. your newsletter, and so there's so many interesting events going on the calendar. And speaking of those, let's turn to Joanna Castle Miller, who is your guest instructor. Joanna, would you please introduce yourself?
Yeah, hi, I'm Joanna, and I'm a playwright and satirist. Most of my plays have satire in them, so I also do sketch comedy and stand-up comedy, but all of it involves an element of satire. And I came to Alaska the first time in 2016, I think it was, bringing a play to the Valdez Theater Conference, and have been coming back literally every time that I get invited or have an opportunity. Anytime I can make up an excuse.
And the class that you're going to be teaching in January is called The Basics of Writing Satire. It's a 4-week series on Saturdays in January, and it takes place via Zoom, speaking of online resources. It sounds really interesting. Can you tell us more about it?
Yeah, you know, I love satire. It's really just anything that holds something up for ridicule, but is usually using humor. And that can be truly anything. It's not always political. It can be a parody. Your favorite parody movies are satire. A lot of your favorite TV shows that are out right now have satire in them. So it's, we don't even always recognize how common it's used in novels, in short stories, in every type of writing, there's satire. So we're going to be looking at the fundamentals of it, just the basics of what makes something a satire. But more important than that, we're going to look at all of the different steps you can take, like a step-by-step guide to making satire that's effective. So even if you're someone that comes from a really strong writing background and you are consider yourself very successful, there may be ways of using satire that you haven't tried before. And if you're totally new to it, you'll still have this process that you can use for starting your own project, whether that's a short article for something like McSweeney's or even just reading things like The Onion differently. You'll understand kind of how they do what they do, if that makes sense. So it's for any level. And I think everyone will leave feeling a little bit empowered by it. Because for me personally, that's what I think is so exciting about satire is in order to do it well, you have to have a really strong point of view. And then you have to be able to say it in a way that engages the person that's listening to you, even if they disagree with you. So that's a real art form, especially right now. It's so easy to have fights. This is a really great way to break through that into a kind of a deeper and more enjoyable conversation with people.
What got you into writing satire?
That's a great question. I got started, I guess, honestly, it's because of my own family having wildly different political views. I started finding humor was how we related to each other. And we could have conversations about anything as long as there was sort of a lightheartedness to it. And the minute that it became personal and intense and there wasn't room for humor, there wasn't really room for the other person. So I really loved relating with my family that way. And I started writing that way as a result, writing things that I thought might make my dad laugh, even though he probably disagrees with what I'm saying, you know, and then that evolved into just doing things a lot more for myself and for fun. I started doing sketch comedy and stand-up comedy, but it was all sort of because I could see it as a way of connecting with people.
And from whom or from where do you draw inspiration when it comes to satire? Any comics or publications or TV shows?
There's so many. I love a really dark satire. Right now, my favorite that's out, that's wildly popular, is Succession. So anything that's really a dark satire, some of the first parodies that I watched were Christopher Guest is still working, but his older movies, Waiting for Guffman and Best in Show. And I love those. I tend to always read McSweeney's, and I've published there a number of times, but when I was first getting started, I was always reading that. But my favorite satire that to this day I still think is such an art form and that I draw from every time I find it, it's kind of rare, is Letters to the Editor. Anytime someone can write a funny letter to the editor, I'm like, I'm convinced, you got me, build that bridge. Whatever you're writing about, I agree with you.
That's great. Katie, it sounds like the attendees of Joanna's class are in for a real treat. Have you ever taken this class or any classes from Joanna?
I haven't, but I'm really excited about this class. Now, this is going to be a weekly in January online, right, Sarah? I mean,
Joanna. Joanna.
Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully brightening up those January days a little.
Yeah. And really, you know, these days you can either laugh or cry, right? So this is just a great way to address what you might be thinking or feeling and laugh about it and get other people to laugh at the same time. So what a gift. And Joanna, where are you coming to us from?
I'm in New York right now. Oh yeah, gosh. I'm based in New York. Yeah, which is why I was saying, like, any chance I can get to be in Alaska, I take.
But this class will be via Zoom, or are you going to come up as well?
That's right. It'll be via Zoom on Saturdays in January.
Great. Well, we look forward to having you with us virtually in the state.
Yeah, it looks like that's going to be Saturday afternoons, 1 to 3. Great.
So thanks so much, Joanna. It's great to meet you and hear about your classes. Katie, turning back to you now, what else is going on with 49 Writers that you'd like to talk about while you're here?
Well, there are a couple things. We are having the first, and this is so exciting, the last event that we did of this kind was the first, and now this is just the second. And that is because we did a in-person holiday gathering and reading at the Valley Library in December of 2019.
Oh, wow.
We're going to do it again, coming right up, a week from Thursday. That'll be Thursday, December 8th at the Valley Library, 5:30 to 7. If you wish to read a poem or a prose piece or an essay or just come and socialize, bring your friends, bring your family, bring something to eat or maybe drink if you wish. If you want to read up to 5 minutes again, sign up at 5:30 there at the Valley Library. And we just kind of, you know, have the podium there and a microphone and sit in a big circle and just have a few holiday snacks and enjoy each other's reading aloud. And I'm really looking forward to this because we haven't been able to, we just haven't had the chance to gather, of course, for, as we all know, various reasons.
Yeah.
So that's coming right up Thursday the 8th at the Valley Library. If you are, I really want to encourage people to get on the newsletter mailing list. You don't have to be a member of 49 Writers to get on the mailing list. And we have that comes out every Thursday and tells you all of the events that are going on. We also get kind of email zaps on specific events like this one. Also, on December 15th, another one of our board members, Sarah Gwynn will be doing a reading and conversation part of that series. And she is a English teacher at Bethel High School. She has an MA, actually, from the University of Alaska Southeast. So she'll be reading some of her work, 6 to 7 p.m. That's a Zoom event. Any of these events you can learn more about, including the satire workshop with Joanna at 49writers.org.
Joanna, I meant to ask, how did you get connected with 49 Writers in the first place?
That was through Kristen Ritter and meeting her at the Valdez Theater Conference. So I had brought up a few plays, and all of which include satire in them in some way, and got to know, have built just a wonderful and beautiful community of talented Alaskan writers ever since.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. And that's the beauty of Zoom too, with workshops like this one with Joanna or with a reading conversation with Sarah Gwynn that's coming up, is that ability to interact and ask questions, even though you're not in person.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks so much for being here to speak with me today. So we've covered 49 Writers, and we've covered Joanna's class. And Katie, you're also a DJ here at the station. So I know you've got a show coming up tonight, and you've got a special theme that you wanted to mention.
I do. I, of course, share the Stormy Weather program on KRNN, our sister station, 102.7, 103.1, with Carolyn Miner. This is my night. And just learned today that, sadly, Christine McVie of Fleetwood Mac, most well-known for Fleetwood Mac, passed on today. Mm. And so I will be featuring some of her work and the work of Fleetwood Mac, which she and their best-known songs, she wrote half of them. So,
so she's a writer, too.
A huge, huge influence on popular music, yes. As well as as always, new music and room for your old favorites.
Thank you so much, Katie Bosler, here representing 49 Writers, and Joanna Castle-Miller, who is the guest instructor for writing satire coming up in January. And how do we sign up for that class, Katie?
The way you would sign up is just go to 49writers.org, and there is a blog post about Joanna's workshop, which has the links at how you can sign up. And just speaking of signing up, we do encourage people to join 49 Writers. It's very reasonable, and there's, of course, also scholarships and student rates available. The regular rate's $49 a year.
$49 a year. $49 a year.
Yeah. So, of course, also it's, you know, the Giving Tuesday week. So, if you want to learn more about how to donate or join 49 Writers, you can just, again, go to 49writers.org.
Thanks so much. And, Joanna, anything else to share before we say goodbye?
I'm thrilled. If anyone's listening and chooses to take the class, I look forward to working with you and meeting you.
Well, I think it sounds like a lot of fun. Thanks again to both of you.
Thank you, Shelley, and thank you, Joanna.
Thank you. Thanks. Bye.
When we come back, we'll hear about an upcoming workshop at Rainforest Yoga. Right now, here's an episode of Sounds Wild, Rusty Blackbirds. You're listening to Juno Afternoon.
Sounds Wild. Hi, I'm Riley Woodford for the Alaska Department of Fish and Game. A rusty blackbird is perched on a fence post, and its moon-white eyes pop dramatically against its shiny black feathers. It's early fall, and this Alaska bird is about to head south for the winter. Rusty blackbirds breed in the boreal forests and muskegs across Canada and Alaska and migrate to the southeastern United States for the winter. In the spring, this bird built a cup-shaped nest in a shrub at the edge of a pond, and in summer, she fed her hatchlings, damselflies, and spiders. Rusty blackbirds are one of the earliest migrants. They tend to linger a bit longer in the fall than other songbirds, and typically spend a month or two feeding and resting at stopover sites on their way south, arriving on their wintering grounds in late November. Although they winter throughout the southeastern United States, the highest numbers are found in the lower Mississippi Valley. Formerly abundant, in recent decades, the rusty blackbird has undergone one of the most rapid declines of any bird species in North America. The reasons are unclear, but habitat loss is likely a major contributor. Rusty blackbirds exhibit high survival and nest success while breeding, indicating that forces in the winter range or during migration are causing their decline. Sounds Wild. I'm Riley Woodford.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon. I'm Shelley Delaney. And my next guests are here from Rainforest Yoga. Welcome Terry Tavell, who is a member of the board of directors at Rainforest Yoga. Hello, Terry.
Hi, Shelley. Nice to be here.
Yeah. And Dr. Marnie Hartman is here with us to talk about the workshop that she is leading next weekend. Hi, Dr. Hartman.
Hi, Shelley. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. I'm looking forward to hearing all about the workshop. But first, Terry, do you want to tell me a bit about Rainforest Yoga and what you've been up to lately?
Sure. I do want to clarify the workshop's on December 9th, 10th, and 11th. So it's not next weekend. It's the following weekend. So just to clarify that a little bit. I'm on the board of Rainforest Yoga. And for those of you who are not familiar with Rainforest Yoga, it was established in 2004. There was a group of community-minded yoga teachers who were looking for a place to teach their yoga because the yoga studio called the Yoga Den had recently closed. And so they formed a nonprofit organization. It's a membership-based nonprofit, and our mission is to foster vital yoga in the Juno community. And we want to promote spiritual growth through instruction in the art, science, and philosophy of yoga.
I know you guys offer an array of classes. Can you give me a couple of examples of some of the ones you offer on a regular, weekly, or monthly basis?
Sure. One of the things that we are struggling with, which is very similar to what many nonprofits, as well as just any kind of business in the world today, is struggling with employees. And in the past, we did have a very large offering of classes. And unfortunately, through attrition, we have a lot of We had a lot of teachers who have been who've retired over the last few years, as well as with the pandemic trying to get people back into the studio. So at the moment, we only have a couple of classes that we offer on a regular basis. We have a mixed vinyasa class that Tammy, who's a longtime instructor, teaches on Sunday mornings. That's from 10 to 11:30 on Sunday mornings. And then we have a new teacher. It's a gentle hatha yoga with Kylie on Sunday early evening, 5:30 to 6:30 p.m. And those are our regular classes that we're offering at the moment. We do have an open meditation hour Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Fridays from 12:10 to 12:50. So basically over the lunch hour, the studio is open for meditation. It's not a guided meditation. People can just drop in for as much, for as long as or as short a time as they want. And that is a pay as you can.
Well, that's a great service. Well, thank you so much for that recap. And I appreciate hearing about what's been happening lately with Rainforest Yoga and the classes that you're still offering. Turning to Dr. Marnie Hartman now, you're holding, Rainforest Yoga is holding a workshop that you are leading December 19th and 11th. It's called Stone, Air, Water, Fire, and A la Carte Weekend of the Elements. So Dr. Hartman, would you please introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about the kind of yoga you teach?
Yeah, I'm Marnie, and I live in Haines and have for about 17 years. And it's really fun to hear Terry's little recap of how Rainforest came together and where it is right now, because it's similar to why I became a yoga teacher. So I am a doctor of physical therapy, and I've had a strong kind of athletic driven background for most of my life. And I was teaching a various number exercise classes in town in Haines when I first moved here in 2005. And a couple of local girls came to me and said, would you teach yoga? We've lost our yoga teacher. And they had the yoga club that had been here for a long time and had just been kind of volunteers. And we ran it similar to a nonprofit, unofficial nonprofit. Anyway, I said, I don't really know yoga, but I can, you know, I can speak and lead a little, and at the same time, being fairly new to this small isolated community and facing what so much of our world is still facing, which is that problem of chronic pain. I was traveling the world studying persistent pain, chronic pain, and my travels took me to Australia and England and even Kansas City, all over the place, just studying pain. And as I was kind of studying pain and studying yoga at the same time, I realized that they really just came together in this beautiful mix of, you know, in order to study our struggles, we need to learn how to study ourselves. And yoga offers that container. And so I decided I should go to yoga teacher training if I was going to continue to teach in the community and try to bring it into my practice. And that fast forwards us to where we are right now, which is me coming to Juneau to teach for one of the first times, which is really exciting. And we're calling this an a la carte weekend rather than like a workshop or retreat weekend, because it's really a kind of pick and choose what you would like. Certainly each class will, you know, benefit the other. If you can come to all four sessions, that's great. But I would hope that nobody feels like they have to. So Friday night, we're anchoring into the four elements just as kind of a nice theme to weave into all of the classes. You know, the four elements are kind of there are solid things within this universe that we can always count on, right? So stone will be our way to help to kind of ground down and just lean into the anchoring parts of the yoga practice. So just slowing down during the holiday season and taking some time to nourish oneself through the quiet side of yoga. And then Saturday morning will be the air element. And this is gonna be a little bit more of a stronger based vinyasa class. I say that, I don't want to scare anybody away, but I would invite people who have a little bit more of a familiarity with practice, or at least with their body and their own capabilities. And this is my standard class that I teach here in Haines. It's kind of a choose your own adventure. So I teach totally spontaneously off the fly based on who's in front of me and what they're asking for. So come with requests, body parts, postures, breath work, and we'll weave it all in. And in the end, hopefully everybody will be able to sink into that beautiful state that happens with mindful movement, which is kind of that airy feeling. And then Saturday evening, we'll go back to the slower side with water and kind of tuning into the water parts of our body and our tissues. So we'll do some lymphatic work. We'll do some myofascial release work using the now so famous myofascial release balls that people love. And we'll do some movements to help kind of glide and slide the fascia. And hopefully everybody will leave feeling more fluid and connected to their body that way. And then our last session is Sunday morning, and that is, we're calling it Practical Applications of Pain Science Yoga Life. Pain Science Yoga Life is a book that I co-authored in 2020, and it's really about just bringing together, it's the bridge of pain science. So what happens in our body when we're having a painful experience, whether that's acute or persistent, and it doesn't have to be just physical. We can't really separate those things, you know, physical and emotional and spiritual and psychological are all kind of brought together in this container that we wear. And so we're going to use kind of just some, we're going to use some mindfulness principles from the Buddhist philosophy and weave them into the science and put those onto a mat practice. So we're not going to really take, it will be, how can I say this? It'll be kind of an overview of how you could use these principles in your own life, but without really taking any personal requests on that one. Mm. So that's a lot in a nutshell.
And that last one is associated with the element of fire.
That's right. Yes. Yes. I didn't mention that. And I chose fire for that one because not that pain is fire, but that it takes our inner fire to overcome. And it's always there. Even when we think that we've lost it, we can find that inner fire, that inner force, that inner place of strength. So we'll kind of talk about that a little bit more on Sunday too. But yeah, thanks for bringing that back.
No, that's a really great explanation of all of your classes. They each sound very interesting on their own, and I'm sure all of them together make a great series too. Terry, have you ever participated in any workshops with Marnie before?
This will be my first opportunity. I have not.
All right.
I will mention that rainforest yoga is pretty well known in the yoga community for bringing in excellent teachers from out of town and out of state to do workshops. So we're looking forward to this workshop with Marnie.
And we're so lucky that you often invite them to Juno Afternoon, and I get to talk to them too.
Yes, yes. And anyone who's interested in registering can go to the rainforestyoga.org website, and there's information easily found on there for registering for the workshop.
Well, it sounds like it's going to be an incredible workshop, and I just want to thank you both for coming on today to talk about yoga and rainforest yoga and the upcoming workshop. So anything else you want to share before we sign off?
I would just say if there's any yoga teachers out there who are interested in teaching, we have a beautiful studio and we're looking for yoga teachers. And that's, I guess, my last little plug.
Well, thank you both so much for talking with me today, and best of luck on your workshop.
Ooh, one other thing.
Thank you very much.
Friday, mm-hmm. Our first Friday offering is with Swarupa, who teaches a wonderful restorative yoga class. And every Friday we do First Fridays. It's a free yoga class. I believe it's at 5:15.
I'm really glad you brought that up. I was going to ask, and when you said your class calendar is a little bit sparse right now, I thought I wouldn't. So I'm glad you mentioned that, because I know that a lot of people really appreciate that first Friday free yoga class. So thanks.
Yes, you're welcome. I'm sorry I forgot that earlier.
That's all right. All right. Well, thanks again for joining me today. And yeah, have a great workshop.
Thank you.
Take thanks care. So much. Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Coming up, the Juno Arts and Humanities Council will tell us all about Gallery Walk. This is Juno Afternoon. You're listening to Juno Afternoon, and my final guests today are Rachel Bonet, Programming Coordinator at the JAC, and Gina Morris, Director for Downtown Business Association. Hello, and welcome to you both.
Thanks so much.
Thank you for having us.
Ah, yes. Thanks so much for being here today. Welcome to the show. Okay, I'm going to start by asking a question that I've never asked before, and I feel like I should know the answer, but I don't. I've lived here a number of years. I never understood why this First Friday is called Gallery Walk, and all of the others are just called First Friday. Do either of you know?
It's a really good question, and I don't know the answer to that.
I think I do know the answer to that. I think that when this started many years ago, I mean, it could have been close to 20 years ago, that it really was oriented around the galleries and having a reason to come downtown and check out the visual art going on from the incredible community of artists that we have in town. And it's sort of evolved from there into a community-wide event that incorporates a whole lot more than that. But that is the basis and the heart of the event.
And I also noticed that it's going on Friday and Saturday, unlike First Friday, which is usually just Friday night. So that's cool. Thank you for having that discussion with me. Our audience is probably screaming. I'm sure they all know or have a lot of different answers to that question. But I'm glad we discussed that. But on to the event. Gina Morris, let's start with you.
Sure.
What does the Downtown Business Association have planned for this weekend?
We have all kinds of wonderful things planned. Several things changed in the last week due to the very, very cold weather. Mm. So we have snuggled all of the outdoor vendors into the JAC for some warm, festive fun for the whole family.
That's so nice of you.
Yeah, we just didn't. Nobody wants to be outside sitting for 4 hours in 8-degree weather. So we've moved the outdoor vendors inside. There will still be a few of our fun events happening on Front Street. We've got the DJ Slay is going to play as long as the gear and our bodies hold up. We'll have a fire pit and a couple of merrymakers handing out candy canes and programs to all of the events. There's nearly 47 events happening all over downtown.
Oh,
so it's got a map.
So
yeah, so much goodness. Little hotties, other goodies just to keep the spirits up. But the really exciting thing is having the holiday trolley back. So thank you to Juno Tours for getting that going again. And you got three stops at the Alaska Museum, at the State Museum, at the South Franklin stop by the tram, and up at Franklin in front. And so you can really get yourself around. And there's so many businesses doing great stuff all around each of those stops. So definitely plan your route and pop in and out of shops and then hop on the trolley. It goes every 20 minutes and it's free to ride.
Wonderful. Oh, that sounds so much fun. I'm already getting excited. Rochelle, turning to you now, what's on your list of things to check out this Friday and Saturday?
So over at the JAC, like Gina mentioned, we will have some of our outdoor booths coming in. We also have a new exhibit by Kirsten Shelton. We'll have illustrations by her opening up. We'll also have some musical performances going on, some nonprofit vendors spreading awareness about various things. And then I made a list of a couple of things that folks should definitely check out around town. The Southeast Alaska Land Trust will be doing their annual wine pull again.
What is that?
It's a fundraiser that they do every year. I think you go up, you either make a donation of money or you draw a card, and then you can bid on different types of wine and non-alcoholic beverages. And then there's a napkin art contest at the Triangle Bar. Definitely.
Oh, yeah. I love that
I'm
one.
I'm very excited about that.
Yeah. And then one kind of cool thing that's going on down on South Franklin is a wine and salmon tasting over at Taku Fisheries. And
so they pair up different salmons with different wines. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, it sounds like they've got like different pairings for people to try. And you know, Gina mentioned we have like 47 events going on around town. We also have easily 8 to 9 different musical performances. All of the events and what's going on around town is going to be listed on our website. So if people have questions or if they want to download the map on their phone, definitely head over there to get that.
That would be jahc.org/gallery-walk.
Thank you.
Hopefully that's pretty easy to find with a Google search. But if not, we'll try to put it on the link to the show today so that everybody can find that. I see you have this nice map here. It looks like it's very like durable Yeah, on some glossy paper. Where do we get one of those?
The Merrymakers will be handing those out. We're going to walk all around. We'll ride the tram around and hang out at each of the stops and for sure be up around the fire pit on Front Street. And I also wanted to mention, we're really excited, the DBA is hosting Selfies with Santa at Heritage Coffee, benefiting the Aware Shelter. So you can come meet Santa, and if you want to snap a selfie, any donation, $5 or over, and you get a chance to do that. And I believe there will be an appearance by Mrs. Claus as well.
Nice. Wow. Photos of Santa have changed a lot since I was a little kid.
Haven't they? Right. But we figured, you know, kids these days, they know what they're doing with the phone, so it'll be all right. We're also really excited to mention that there's a lot of free parking opportunities downtown on Friday night.
I think that's good to mention because people get overwhelmed.
They do. Yeah, certainly. So it's really important to know that, and thank you to CBJ for celebrating with us and not enforcing the paid parking or the two-hour limit downtown starting at 3 on Friday. Wow. They're also offering free parking at the Shoppers Lot, the North Franklin Lot, the Downtown Transportation Center garage and the marine parking garage. And we also encourage people to park for free at the Juno Hydropower lot on Egan that's across the street from the Jack. And then you can come over and there's ornament making and treats and hot tea and cider and samples and gift wrapping and music. And the Juno party animals are going to be doing free body glitter and games for the kids while you wait for all of that. And we even have the Forno Rosso pizza truck out front.
Oh, wow. That sounds like a good strategy because it's a nice big lot with lots of parking, and then you can make the Jack your first stop and just go from there.
Definitely.
I can tell I'm already thinking ahead to what I'm going to do. Do either of you have any traditions or favorite activities that you associate with Gallery Walk each year?
Oh, that's a good question. I would say normally I'm working Gallery
Walk.
Yeah,
as part of the planners, maybe you don't have a lot of time for the activities.
But I think in past years, one of the things that I've enjoyed doing is once I'm off work, heading downtown, meeting up with friends, maybe going out to a restaurant, having some dinner, and then there's always music that you can catch to close out Gallery Walk. So maybe head down to the Red Dog and watch Susu and the Prophets perform, or go over to the Crystal Saloon and see
Care of Bluegrass.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's who I'm excited to see. They start at 7.
And what about you, Gina? Any traditions?
I have yet to make a tradition because this is my first gallery walk.
Is it really?
It is, yes.
Well, you're talking about it like you've been to a million of them.
I moved to town in 2020, and so there was quite a bit of on Halloween, for that matter. So quite a bit of being inside and not going out. And I got sick last year, and I couldn't go. And I was so looking forward to it. So this will be my first year to make the tradition, and I'm really looking forward to doing that.
Oh, that's great. Well, I'm so glad you get to experience Gallery Walk this year. I think it's going to be a good one. And even though it's cold, at least it's going to be dry. So I think that'll really encourage people to walk around, briskly walk around, so they can stay warm. So it sounds like it's going to be another really fun and successful year for the event. Thanks for coming to the show today. Is there anything else you guys want to mention or talk about before we say goodbye?
I'd like to say thank you to the sponsors that helped do this. Rochelle and I, the DBA and the Arts Council, put this on, but we couldn't do it without the sponsors. So we want to thank you, of course, KTOO and Juno Tours, Capital Copy, the Juno Party Animals, and Heritage Coffee. But it's a community event, right? So it couldn't happen without support from all over, like IBEW and Juno Hydropower. And there's so many other businesses, Juno Radio Center, Betsy at Studio A, the JPD and Capital Fire and Rescue. I mean, everybody in the city and the streets team have been so helpful in getting us prepared for this. It really is for everyone in Juneau, and we're really grateful.
Yeah, it's an all-hands event.
Yeah.
Well, thank you to both of you as well for helping to coordinate and all the work that goes into it. I said in one of my other interviews today, Gallery Walk always sneaks up on me, but I know people are working so hard for a really long time to prepare for it. So thank you. Gunashish to you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here today. And we'll see you out there this weekend.
We wish you say good kiss was, and I think it's New Year. Our hearts wish you good cheer today and always. We wish you say good kiss was, and I think it's New Year. Now bring us some smoked salmon, now bring us some smoked salmon. Now bring us some smoked salmon and crackers right now. Our hearts wish you good cheer today and always. We wish you Sigul kiss was and a thing it New Year. Blueberry jam and spruce dip cookies. Blueberry jam and spruce dip cookies. Blueberry jam and spruce dip cookies. Do pass.
share Alaskan goodies. We love to share Alaskan goodies. We love to share Alaskan goodies. Christmas or anytime, our hearts wish you good cheer today and always. We wish you Sigu Kiswas and a thing.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Juno Afternoon. On tomorrow's show, this week's episode of Culture Rich Conversations from Juno Black Awareness Association, we are bringing back our very special guest, Joseph Robinson, for a more in-depth discussion centered around cryptocurrency and the economic empowerment that provides for the Black community as well as the LGBTQ community. So tune in as host Christina Michelle and Joseph Robinson discuss all you need to know to be successful in this economy while investing in cryptocurrency. That's live tomorrow, Thursday, December 1st at 3 o'clock. Juno Afternoon currently broadcasts Wednesday through Fridays, 3 p.m. on 104.3 KTOO Juno and 91.7 KAUK Juno Ok Bay, also online at ktoo.org. The show repeats at 7 p.m. right here on this public radio station. Support for Juno Afternoon is provided by Hanson Gress Heritage Coffee Roasting Company and Clinkett and Haida Social Enterprises. Our theme music is by Indian Agent. Juno Afternoon is produced by the KTOO Arts and Culture team with help from Boston Christopher and Aaron Tripp. To listen to individual interviews, see links to anything we discussed, or to be on the show yourself, check out our website at ktoo.org/JunoAfternoon. And until tomorrow, have a great Juno evening.